And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 as we kickstart another week with plenty to get to over the next couple of hours. A new week means just that much closer to the start of football. Gamecocks and Clemson getting underway over the weekend. Coming up, Team USA ends up winning the gold in basketball as we wrap up the Olympics. What does it mean? How did things go? What should be different moving forward? Plus, which teams are under the most pressure in each conference this year in college football? Josh Allen signed a huge contract for the Bills. What does it mean for the NFL this year? Also, we'll have some reactions from the Hall of Fame enshrinement over the weekend for the NFL. The sad news of Bobby Bowden's passing as we lost a legend in college football, and a whole lot more over the next few hours. We'll continue our training camp check-in with the Carolina Panthers this afternoon as we catch up with David Newton in the final hour, and a whole lot more between now and then. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. You can always give us a call, 843-721-9500. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays. On Facebook, at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go, by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Also later on, who could be upset in week one of the NFL season? Which of the big favorites could be the one that actually loses? We'll get to that coming up as well. With you till 3 on this Monday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? You seem to leave something important out.
What's that?
We not only won gold in basketball, we came back and led all countries in gold medals.
That's
as
right.
along with overall medals.
That's right. We swept it. We won the overall medals. We won the gold. Also, if you took into consideration gold, silver, and bronze and gave them different point values, we'd win that as well.
That's right. We came back and beat those damn Shy-Coms.
Now, do people actually keep track of that? Like, do you actually win the Olympics? Can you tell me who won, like, the 2012 Olympics, 2008? Do people actually remember the overall? Or do we just remember, like, individual performances?
Or maybe we were doing it just about every year, so they stopped keeping up with it.
Yeah, did we win? Did we win all the Olympics?
As far as I remember.
I can't even remember. I don't know. I can't tell you. Who won the medal count of the 1984 Olympics? I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah, that was in Los Angeles, and yeah, we won them by far.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways, I got some thoughts on the Olympics. We'll get to that coming up. Tie it into the Ocho from last week on ESPN and everything else going on. In fact, let me start with the Olympics, specifically Team USA coming back to win the gold in men's basketball. And it shouldn't be much of a surprise. We should have won the gold. They did once again. But the way that things started out, there were concerns, thoughts that maybe we wouldn't get there. And in hindsight, right, like Draymond Green took his victory lap and Kevin Durant, and they were calling out the people that doubted them. But originally, at the start of the tournament, you can understand why. Even though they were only exhibition games and, you know, even then when they started and they lost to France, and they were losing games that they shouldn't have, that they haven't in the past, or even when they were winning, not winning by as much as they normally would. And losing to countries they would never lose to. Now they got things off and running and got it together and went on to win the gold. I said on Friday, heading into the gold
into the championship game. That it wasn't long ago we had what we labeled the redeem team, because we were going through a bit of a tough stretch, and so we were sending these guys. They were going to redeem Team USA. I think this year is really the redeem team because of the way things started. And not only that, but they were able to beat those teams along the way. France, who had beaten them the previous two matchups, that was their matchup in the championship. What better foe for the gold medal game than France, the team that you could get back at for making you look so bad, for beating you the last two games, for the team that Greg Popovich said at the start of the whole tournament, right, we've been preparing for them for 4 years. And then they went out and they lost that first game. I was like, well, you probably should do a little more preparing. They came back and they responded. And not only that, but when they did lose, when Team USA did lose, in part it was fourth quarter comebacks by the other team or just the failure to close out wins late in the games. And that was not the case for Team USA in the medal rounds. Right? They were down 15. They were the ones that were trailing against Australia, came back, put them away in the second half to win. Now, in the fourth quarter Friday, right, got a little too close for comfort. It was the smallest margin of victory that we have had in a gold medal game. It was a two-point game or a three-point game there in the final minute. Looked like Team USA would cruise. They were up by about 10 with less than 2 minutes left, and then before you knew it, France got it down to a one-possession game, and Team USA closed it out. So it was a struggle, and throughout this whole tournament or these Olympic Games, it was one of the biggest struggles we've had for Team USA, but in the end, they still win the gold. And that's all that matters. And they continue that run, as they should. You can tell me about all these other countries catching up and the talent being good elsewhere. And, oh, Luka Doncic over here and Rudy Gobert over here. But Team USA has a team filled of NBA All-Stars. These other countries will have about four guys that play in the NBA and then a bunch of other players that can't make it. Team USA has a roster filled with guys who play in the NBA. And I compared it before to the SEC versus the NFL. People always take the best team in college football, and every year, we'll give it a few months, we'll have this conversation probably in October. Some lazy media personality will bring it up, and, oh, can Alabama, can they beat the Texans this year? No, they couldn't. Because as good as Alabama may be, and even though they may put 12 guys in the NFL, guess what? That entire Texans team is made up of NFL players. I don't know how we never comprehend this. And people have that conversation every year. Could this college team beat this NFL team? No, they could not. Because they're made up of, 10% of their roster is good enough to play in the pros? 100% of the professional team's roster is good enough to play in the pros. What don't you understand? Same idea here. You know, like a third of France's roster is good enough to play in the NBA? Oh, okay. That's an improvement from the last couple of decades. That's pretty good. But guess what? 100% of America's roster is good enough to play in the NBA. And not only that, most of them are all-stars as well. Now, what did this run mean for individual players or people involved? I imagine Friday night was the final game for Greg Popovich. He already goes down as the losingest coach in Olympic history for Team USA. That's not good. At least they ended up winning the gold. But he's 72 years old. Grant Hill is actually going to take over running Team USA. I imagine there'll be a new coach in charge in 4 years. Plus, you had guys complaining during these Olympics, complaining about Popovich's style. And Greg Popovich is one of the greatest coaches we've had in basketball. But he's also one of those guys that, you know, Bob Dylan always had a great line that I cite frequently. And he says, ain't it hard when you discover that he really wasn't where it's at? You know, you find out that somebody's not exactly who you thought. You thought they were a great guy. Turns out they're kind of a jerk. And we love Greg Popovich, and people always give him a pass. The guy's kind of a jerk. Now, he's a bully, doesn't treat other people well just because he's won some basketball games. Big ego. Right, very political, opinionated, which is fine, but to the point where it's like, you know, he's right, and if you disagree, you're wrong. Eh. And now, during this Olympic event, you had players complaining about the offense he was running, his coaching style, playing for him. They ended up getting the gold, but maybe at the cost of a coaching change for Team USA. And even though they did win the gold, weren't dominant enough along the way, and Popovich may have taken a knock. But on the flip side, for the positive, a big Olympic summer for Kevin Durant, who was fantastic and showed he's the best player in the world. And doing this all 2 years removed from the Achilles tear. Then he comes back, plays great with the Nets this year, was fantastic in Game 7. If he was an inch further back, he knocks down that three, the Nets advance. Who knows? Maybe they're the ones still winning, finding a way to win the NBA Finals. But Durant was great in the postseason. Then he goes to the Olympics, and he started off a little bit slow. but led the team to gold, playing great along the way in the biggest moments, and also became the all-time leading scorer in Team USA history. But even at the start, when they had Kevin Durant, and by the way, again, right, what he did this summer in the Olympics was at the end of an NBA season, went right to the Olympics, essentially, after the playoffs ended, had to play the regular season, had to play in the playoffs, got very little of a break, goes to the Olympics, doing it all 2 years removed, or really just his first season back from the Achilles injury, and is fantastic. And I've talked about it. I talked about it throughout the NBA season when I kept telling you that the Nets would win the finals, and if they were healthy, they would have. Right, but he's the greatest scorer from a skill standpoint we've probably ever seen. That if you were creating somebody, if you were a mad scientist in the lab trying to create the ultimate basketball scorer, you'd probably make him just like Kevin Durant. To have that size, that athleticism, those ball handles, the shot, everything. He can do it all. But Durant was on this team at the start of the Olympics when they were struggling to hit their stride. And then what helped turn things around? Well, the additions of Drew Holiday, Devin Booker, Chris Middleton. Charleston's own Chris Middleton, who's now an NBA champion and a gold medal winner in the Olympics all in the same summer. Not too bad, right? How was your summer? It's like when you go back to school after your summer break, and, oh, what did you do this summer? How was your summer? Oh, we went to Six Flags, and we went on a camping trip. Right, Chris Middleton is going to show up to school in September, and then, how's your summer? Oh, I won the NBA Finals, and then I won gold in the Olympics. What'd you do? Oh, we went camping one night. Okay. Now, Chris Middleton, talk about having quite the summer. But the difference for Team USA was when you added those guys to the roster, especially Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday had the biggest summer impact or turnaround, I think, of maybe anybody. The Bucks brought him in to try to be the missing piece to replace Eric Bledsoe. He wasn't great to begin the postseason. Really wasn't great offensively throughout the postseason, but it was in the NBA Finals his defense that played a huge role. Maybe was the difference in the Bucks winning, right, as he shut down Devin Booker and Chris Paul. Or at least shut down Chris Paul, helped slow Booker at times. Then he joins Team USA, who was struggling, and played a huge role defensively throughout the tournament as well, allowing them to go on to win the gold. This was a huge summer for Drew Holiday to improve his stock, to show what he's capable of, and Chris Middleton as well. Because myself included, many were tough on Middleton about how, he couldn't win. You know, he didn't play great in the Olympics. He was good. Little ups, little downs along the way. Wasn't the main star of the team. He was a role player. Wasn't Kevin Durant. But we've only seen four guys in the history of the NBA win an NBA Finals and the gold the same year. And that includes LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Kyrie Irving, and now Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday. So a big summer for those two. Not only what they accomplished, but also for those two guys. Right? If Kevin Durant wins a championship and then gold, it's like, yeah, well, we already know he's the best player in the world. When Drew Holiday does it, providing his big impact, it's like, oh, actually, you know what? This guy's better than maybe we thought. I see why the Bucks were so interested in adding him. And when Chris Middleton does it, it's like, oh, maybe we're a little off on this guy. And I didn't think he could win in the big games. Helped the Bucks win the NBA Finals, playing well throughout the postseason, and then at least contributed to winning the gold. Right, was he the biggest star? No, he wasn't, but he played a role, and Team USA wasn't playing all that great until they added Middleton and Holiday. Right, just like if you watch the NFL season, NBA, whatever, the trade deadline just happened, and you see when they add guys to the team and they turn, they made a big difference. Right, that was Middleton and Drew Holiday coming to Team USA in order to get to the gold this year. So they accomplished what they should have. It was a little harder than it probably should have been. And now for Middleton, Durant, Holiday, they certainly helped themselves out, impressed, improved their stock. Popovich, maybe not so much. Damian Lillard, a star in his prime who, you know, maybe forcing his way out of Portland. He wasn't very good. That may not help because we haven't seen Lillard win the biggest games yet in the NBA playoffs. Didn't play great in the Olympics either, so that may not help his cause or his case. But for somebody like Durant, we already know, best player in the world. Drew Holiday, more impactful than maybe we thought. Chris Middleton, right, can contribute in the bigger moments, more so than maybe we originally thought. And Greg Popovich, maybe it's time to move on. Had a great career, now in his 70s, very stubborn, not changing his ways. Guys don't really get along with him. It's more about, a player's coach these days. Popovich may be on the downslope of that legendary career, if he hasn't been already. Congratulations to Team USA on winning the gold, as they should have. And I'm glad they accomplished it. Coming up, when it comes to the Olympics, the Olympics from a rating standpoint, all that sort of stuff, it wasn't a great Olympic Games this summer. We'll get into the reasons why. Plus, when it comes to Team USA, I don't know how much of the Olympic basketball you watched. I really, for the most part, only watched Team USA. I watched some of the other semifinal game, watched Luka go up against France. I watched the end of that one. But there's just something different. If you are a basketball fan and you watch the NBA and then you watch the international games, I think there are some things that the NBA could actually learn from these Olympics moving forward as well. So we'll get to that coming up. A little more on the Olympics when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
With the Olympics wrapping up, what could be different moving forward? Also, what could be different for the NBA moving forward after watching international basketball here this summer? Get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. But Team USA winning the gold on Friday night, Kevin Durant with the 29 points was fantastic. And as they laid out in the open, I think these Olympic Games helped the profile of Kevin Durant, not that it needed much more help. And then I was surprised to see the follow-up of him signing to remain in Brooklyn. I thought this Brooklyn thing would be a 2-year experiment because those guys can get out of their contracts or will be free agents after this upcoming season. I thought that was it. But Durant committing long-term, 4 years, that's long-term, in the NBA, to Brooklyn. I was very surprised. For Drew Holiday, I thought this was a huge summer for him to show his impact, especially on the defensive end. Chris Middleton to get over that hump and not only win the NBA Finals, but then turn around and, again, while he wasn't the star, at least to be part of a gold medal winning team, you can't take that away from him. He and Holiday, the fifth and sixth players all time to win an NBA Finals and a gold medal in the same year. And even Jason Tatum, who stepped up big in the gold medal game. But on the flip side, Bam, I thought played pretty poorly. I thought Damian Lillard did not live up to expectations, and even Greg Popovich, I think, takes a hit in all this. Sure, he was the coach that helped win the gold, but you had players complaining, you had the slow start, he has the worst winning percentage, as good as it may be, still the worst for Team USA. Sure, maybe he's facing tougher competition now than Coach K in the past, but still, we expect our teams to be dominant, so it doesn't look good. I think those are at least three that kind of took a little bit of a hit. Now, Damian Lillard's still a great player and one of the best in the league. No one's going to hold it, you know, teams aren't going to say, well, we don't want to trade for him anymore. But I just thought it was a little lackluster for him, Bam, and even Greg Popovich when it came to their performances in the Olympic Games. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones because Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you?
Pretty good, Luke. How are you to this morning, Monday morning?
Yeah, doing
Monday
well.
Afternoon.
Yeah,
doing well. Monday afternoon. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
real quick, I thought when you take an all-star from each team, each one of those is a type A personality used to leading their team, and put them together, that's not a good mix, because you're taking the best of the best and trying to put them together. And that's not – any team has a – everybody has a role. Well, this person's role is used to scoring. You put all scorers together, even though they're all-stars, just doesn't create the right mix. And I didn't like that. And I'm going to be honest with you, when Milutin and Booker came, that's what put us over the top. If they didn't come in that plane after the finals, we would have lost. Because Booker is nice, and Middleton brought something to the game. And also, I wanted to tell you, my brother's agent for Kelly Oubre signed with the Hornets for $25 million over 2 years. That's his agent. My brother's his agent. Wow. Just to let you know.
There you go.
For Kelly, I left the cap out of the hat. So it was a good job him getting him signed, because he's only going to get the mid-level exception. But he finally did get it. He got that signing. But with the new rules this summer, the NBA refs are trying to change all that non-basketball moves and stuff. So, yep. All right, Luke, I got to go, but I just want to hit you up. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Ricardo. All right. Hey, dinner on your brother next time. Getting a portion. What do agents get? 5%, 10% of that deal? Kelly Oubre going to the Hornets. I like Oubre. He was a little up and down. I like that signing for the Hornets. I don't know if it's the best fit for Charlotte. Right, but he could help you with Gordon Hayward, if you can't count on Hayward. I like Oubre, not the best outside shooter, but maybe when you add him to a mix with Ball, who's a good distributor, sets teammates up, maybe that will help. But I did like that addition for the Hornets. Has had a little up-and-down career, not the best on the defensive end, but I think he has some potential, and he could add something to Charlotte. Now, what Ricardo said, I agree with in regards to the addition of those players from the NBA Finals. I think that made the difference. Right, just like you're watching the baseball this year at the trade deadline. You know, like the Yankees were scuffling. Then they went out, they added Anthony Rizzo, and they added Joey Gallo and even Andrew Heaney in the rotation. And now, you know, they're like something like 9-2 since the deadline. And well, that made a big difference. Same idea. Like, this was Team USA. This was the roster they already had. They were scuffling. Then they get Middleton in the mix, Drew Holiday, Devin Booker. They start playing better. Became just the second team or country to end up winning gold in basketball after losing their initial game. And they turned things around, and they played much better. Durant started playing better, but the additions of Holiday, Middleton, Booker certainly helped as well. That is what helped them get push them over the edge. And the NBA, when watching these games, Adam Silver at home, I saw a lot of comments, and I agree. I've shared comments here on the show as well, that when you watch the FIBA, the International Basketball, and the Olympics, there's just a better flow to it than the NBA. I mean, how many stoppages do you get in the NBA? In FIBA, they're shorter quarters, so that helps. 10-minute quarters, you know, the games are pretty quick. But also, we don't have all the reviews, and, oh, the flagrant fouls is so annoying. And any time, oh, did he hit him in the head? We have to go to the monitor and go take a look. We may have to issue a, right? And they do it in college basketball, not as frequently. But it just takes you out of the flow and the pacing of a game. You have to, oh, we have to go check this one. Hold on, let's go see. You have to look up all these calls. The flow is just much better. We don't have so many timeouts. We don't have all the reviews, and we don't have these, oh, is it a flagrant one? Is it a flagrant two? We have to go look. It just is what it is. Right? In the NBA, it's more of a player-driven league, even down to the games themselves and the refs, where the players are complaining about calls all the time, and then we have to stop the game. LeBron's having a discussion with Joey Crawford, and then, okay, hold on, let's go review it, and this and that. In the international games, the Olympics, they call the foul, like, that's it. Hey, sorry, you don't like it. You know, big deal. Two foul shots. Here we go. Game's moving on. We don't need to go to the replay monitor. It's just a much better product, better flow. That's what we need in the NBA. Now, the difference being, for a lot of it in the NBA, like the commercials, the timeouts, even the reviews that turn into all that stuff, right? That's where the commercials come in, and then that's how they make money. So the NBA, of course, they want more stoppages. It's why many believe soccer has never worked in this country, right? Because you put soccer on TV, there's no stoppages. TV networks are thinking, we don't want to put this on our main network, these random games. We can't make much money off of this. We can't play our commercials, right? You're telling me it's 45 minutes straight. We're going to go 45 minutes without an advertisement. That's always been the belief why soccer hasn't worked well in this country, because they don't get the best TV deals, because the TV networks are like, we can't make enough money off of this to put you in prime time on our main network. We can't even play any commercials. We'll put you over here on, you know, Fox Sports 2 at 11 a.m. on a Sunday. That's when we'll carry the games. So the NBA, they appreciate all the breaks. Well, at least the TV networks do. And then, you know, when the TV networks make more money, that allows the NBA to make more money and so on and so forth. in the Olympics. They're not here to make money. They didn't get together in Tokyo and say, like, okay, how can we get more commercials to make more money for our TV partners? They don't care about that. They're just playing these games and crowning gold champions. I just think there's a better flow. Now, the Olympics itself, ratings were down by 50% this year. And as I warn you every time we talk about ratings, right, there's a lot that goes into it. There's more cord cutters these days. More opportunity, more abilities to watch. You can stream it. You can watch it on your phone. You're not just sitting down at the TV. So ratings are different now compared to 10, 20 years ago. But even if you go back to the last Olympics, just 4 years ago, ratings were down 50% in this year's Olympics. And I think there's a few things at play. The number one, or at least maybe the most obvious, is the time zone. When they're 13 hours ahead, that makes things a little more complicated. Like that gold medal game for basketball was Friday at 10:30 at night. Not too bad, especially if you're on the West Coast. Right, if you're on the East Coast, I was looking forward to it. It was on my radar. I was waiting for it. I turned it on at 10:30, watched the game. It was over at, 12:30. That's not too late on the East Coast, especially for a Friday night. But it's not ideal. They wouldn't put an NBA Finals game at 10:30 on a Friday like that. It's not ideal, and a lot of the other events were, 1:30 Eastern time was when a lot of the other basketball games were, 2 a.m. Eastern time. It's like, well, you lose at least half the country. That's even 11 o'clock on the West Coast. People have to get up for work. They're not staying up. So the time zones certainly didn't help. I thought the broadcast is a little outdated in the sense that NBC treats the Olympics like it's, like a TV show instead of live sports, where they put this whole package together and they want to show you what's best for, they want to save what's best for primetime. And then you have Tirico in a studio sitting down and talking. They're doing interviews and, okay, now let's show you what happened in Equestrian today. And then they show you instead of just showing a live event, like you sit down and watch a football game and they have the broadcast and they have the pregame show and the halftime show and the postgame, and here's the game and that's that. Instead of packaging it all together and, well, here's what happened earlier in gymnastics. It's like, yeah, we have the internet. Man, ESPN, Fox Sports, they have live shows all day. They're already talking about it. You can get that news elsewhere. This isn't 1980 where you sit down on a Sunday night and like, okay, let's see what happened in the Olympics today. They're going to show us. They're going to get us all caught up. Like it's the ABC's Why World of Sports or whatever. Like you're learning through as these things happen. People are reacting on social media. And the greatest example was when Simone Biles did drop out, people knew about it as it was happening. And for NBC, they were saying, all right, tune in tonight to see what happened at 8 p.m. This isn't like a commercial for Who Shot JR, right? It's like, oh, find out tonight what happened. We already know what happened. It's on Twitter. It's on the internet. We already know. She dropped out because of the twisties. We don't need to sit down tonight and figure, ooh, what happened with Simone Biles? We have the whole story. So that's another part of it. NBC treating it like it's still, 20 years ago and we don't have the internet and can get the news up to the minute, thinking that we have to be at the TV tonight at 8 o'clock. Appointment viewing, find out what happened in the Olympics. It's not like that anymore. Additionally, a third issue would be all the many different options nowadays that you didn't have back in the day. Not only to watch these different athletes, right? Now you know who Luka Doncic is. Years ago, like when Tony Kukoc even was playing against the Dream Team and helped, eventually he came over to the Bulls in the early 90s, but it's like, oh, who's this guy? You learn about some new players. Now you watch Luka Doncic all year long anyways. He's on that other team. Other options in terms of what you can watch on the weekend with all the different streaming services. Other concerns being maybe a lack of stars. You don't have your Usain Bolt, Michael Phelps, even a Ryan Lochte, a lot of new stars. And that's not to take anything away from these athletes because they're all incredible at what they do. But we are a nation or, sports fans that do like big names. That's why the Cowboys Steelers was the first preseason game. And Simone Biles was maybe the biggest star, but then she did not participate for a lot of the events. So I don't think that helps either. You want to sit down and see, okay, how does Michael Phelps do, or how did Michael Phelps do this year, or what is he going to do this year? Don't really have that this year, or did not have that. Other than Simone Biles would be that one appointment television star that, oh, we have to see what she accomplishes. And then again, she didn't participate in a lot of the events. And the last issue or concern of maybe the six reasons why the Olympics has changed over the years or wasn't as big of a deal this year. Actually, this is number five, the lack of a true rivalry like you had maybe even in the 80s with the Soviet Union. And the final part, the sixth part to all this, would be the politics. Maybe you don't care. Maybe you are not offended by the protesting. Maybe you prefer when athletes speak out or whatever it may be. But you know there are people that are turned off by it, not only with the Olympics, but really all sports. I think six factors that played into the Olympics not quite being the same this year, whether it was or just the hyper state of the political landscape in general over the past 12, 18 months, the different time zones that made it a little more difficult to consume the sports, the way that NBC still handles the broadcast, the lack of some of the bigger stars we've come to love over the years in the Olympics, no true rivalry with another country where it was you know, such a big deal to go up and compete against and try to beat them, all the different options you have to watch different things or even watch the Olympics in different ways, see the highlights on Twitter and before the broadcast anyways. And then I would also say that with all of this, NBC themselves, speaking of the ratings and how they handled it, how about the fact that NBC usually has the Pro Football Hall of Fame preseason game? They usually have that Hall of Fame game that we had last week with the Steelers and Cowboys. But NBC this year had the Olympics, so Fox was able to broadcast that football game. And while the Olympic ratings were slashed in half this year, that was the most watched Hall of Fame preseason game we've had, where it was like 9 million people or something tuned into that football game on Thursday night, and so Fox reaped the benefits. So a winner in all this also just happened to be Fox, where NBC said, oh, we can't do the football this year. We got the Olympics. Fox, it's all yours. And they said, yes, please. And they had plenty of viewers the other. You want to talk about ratings? That preseason game did just fine. So you could tell me, what do we care about preseason football? Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people are watching. A lot more than than a lot of those Olympic events. I think it was 8 or 9 million people sat down and watched the Cowboys and Steelers third stringers play in Canton on Thursday. We know we love our football.
Now, I'm going to challenge you a bit, saying we don't have a big rival in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Do you think after this year, where we had to come from behind to win the gold medal count, do you think we now have a rivalry with communist China, mainland China?
I don't think so. I think we should have some rivalries. But I think, like, if you ask the average person or sports fan or someone who's watching the Olympics, I don't think it has that same emotional pull in our competitions in these Olympics against Japan or any country for that matter.
Or like it did back during the Soviet Union.
Yeah,
I just don't
think it's the same.
Or as they had to compete in 92 as the unified team.
Yeah, I just don't think it's the same. Now, I will say, as the Olympics were unfolding, look, I didn't watch a ton of the other events other than basketball, but I was watching the medal count, and of course I want us to win. So I'm looking at it, and, oh, we better catch up. We got to beat them. We have to win more golds. So in that sense, you're certainly pulling for your country against whoever you're directly competing against coming down the home stretch, which in this case was Japan. But there wasn't that natural rivalry like at the start of the Olympics where you're seeing how you do against them eye to eye. You have to do better, win beat them in these different events, make sure you win the gold. I think that's lacking right now. Could it happen for the next Olympics? Yes, certainly. We'll see what happens over the next 3 years now at this point. And by the way, with the medal count, we just go strictly off of gold medals, right? Is that whoever has the most golds wins? Is that how
it's the most gold and I think the most overall medals.
Okay. Because I always thought you should have gold medals be worth three, right? If we're going to count silver and bronze, like, it should be worth something as well. So gold should be worth three, silver should be worth two, bronze should be worth 1 point, and you should do like a whole scoring system.
Sort of like how the top 25 rankings and the Heisman Trophy are decided.
Yeah, because,
you know, for every first place vote, it's 25 points.
Right.
Second place, 24, on down to 1 point for a 25th place vote.
Yeah, it makes sense, because what if you have the most golds but not the most medals overall? Like, what is more valuable? I would say gold, because you're finishing in first, but there's a reason why we award the bronze and silver, so that should count for something. Now, it doesn't matter. This country, we swept. We won the gold, we won the total medal, and if you did do my little breakdown, we would have won that as well. But I'm just saying, in general, I think that would be more interesting. Because otherwise, people care about different things. You look at the medal counts, and some people only care about the gold. Some people don't care about the total medals. Why don't we get a little arithmetic going on here? Figure out gold, silver, bronze, they're all different, weighted differently. And let's see who actually did perform the best. But it was us, once again. Coming up, Josh Allen's contract. Josh Allen signed a huge contract for the Buffalo Bills over the weekend. And you may think, who cares, right? The Buffalo Bills, they're on the other side of the country. But what does it mean for the NFL this year and moving forward? Plus, ESPN put out their FPI projections for the upcoming NFL season. We'll get to that as well and how it relates to Josh Allen's contract. We'll do that next. The Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody
We'll get to the Josh Allen contract coming up a little bit later on. But first, we lost a legend in the football world over the week. And we'll discuss that here. And remember, Bobby Bowden on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio in just a moment. We'll have our latest training camp check-in later on this afternoon as we check in on the Carolina Panthers training camp this afternoon as we creep towards week one of the NFL preseason this weekend. And we'll check in with the Panthers a little bit later on. Sad news over the weekend. In fact, yesterday, in fact, of Bobby Bowden's passing, as we knew it was imminent over the last couple of weeks, we got the report that he had, so they didn't specify, but he had an illness that was terminal. And Bobby is almost 92 at the time of his passing yesterday. And so this, of course, sent shockwaves throughout the sports world and the college football world, and a lot of people, a lot of coaches, former players, media members reacted. We'll hear from a couple in just a moment. But Bowden passed away yesterday at the age of 91 as one of the greatest college football coaches we've had. And there are certain teams that we talk about each year in terms of, you know, can they turn it around? Will they get back? Will Miami be back this year? Will Texas be back? USC. And when it comes to Florida State and the state that they're currently in now at their program and the conversations that are had about can Florida State turn it around? Can they get back to where they once were? The reason for those expectations or even conversations, well, that's Bobby Bowden. Because when he first arrived to Florida State in the 70s, I mean, they were one of the worst programs in Division I college football at the time. And before he arrived, they were 3-8 the very season before he got there. In 1974, 2 years before Bowden's arrival, they were 1-10. The year before that, 0-11. Even in 1972, 7-4. Right, they were a poor program at that time. And he arrived there. Year number one, they go 5-6. Right, not too great. But by year number two in 1977, Florida State won 10 games. They won the Tangerine Bowl. They were ranked 11th in the country. And then from then on, they were winning double-digit games most years. They were winning a bowl game just about every year. They were ranked just about every year, taking us into the 90s when, you know, they became one of the best teams in the country and started to win national championships and were ranked as the number one team and, you know, winning 10-plus games every year. And that great run he had really from about 1987 until like 2000, 2001, when they were winning 10-plus games every year. They had a streak where he won, what, 14 straight bowl games, something like that, and they were playing in some good bowls. They went to a bowl game every year from 1982 until the time he retired in 2009. Just the job he did there at Florida State. And the reason why we have these expectations, or even why Jimbo was able to continue that trend and win a national championship after Bowden retired, it was all because of what he accomplished and built there at Florida State. Starting out as an independent, then getting to the ACC and dominating there early on. Took 4 years for them to lose their first conference game. It was an incredible run for Bobby Bowden. Now, of course, a sad time when you have to say goodbye to a legend like that, especially for his family, of course, right? You lose a father, a grandfather. But if you could sign up for that life, it would be hard to complain. Living to almost 92, big family, 21 grandchildren. You have never heard a bad word about him, right? Especially in his passing, everybody from throughout the sports world came out of the woodwork to share a great story that they had with Bobby. Had great success doing what he loves and was able to do it for a very long time. Doesn't make it any easier to say goodbye to a loved one, or even if you're just a Florida State fan, you have that connection, maybe you met him over the years, whatever it is, still is terribly sad news. But with the life that he did lead, right, it was quite the remarkable 91 and a half years he had, not only as a great coach of Florida State, but by all accounts, an even better person. Now, I didn't think of this until this morning because I did see all the interviews and comments and posts online. My own cousin was the mascot at Florida State when he was there as an undergrad. And so he was posting on social media about, you know, the loss of Bobby, and he shared photos with him and had some stories. And I thought, oh, it would be great to get him on the air and talk about it. And I didn't think of that until this morning. And I didn't want to reach out in the last moment. So maybe I'll reach out and see if he would be willing. Right? Just, he's just my cousin. He's a regular guy, but he had experiences with Bobby. I could talk about it. But anybody that came across him has great stories to tell, which speaks to the character of the person he was. Not just a great football coach, but the things he was doing off the field as well. In fact, Nick Saban shared a great story yesterday talking to the media in the aftermath of this news. Here's what Saban had to say about his favorite memory of Coach Bobby Bowden.
My first year being a graduate assistant is when my father passed away, and I was at Kent State being a graduate assistant for Don James. And, you know, one day the phone rings and it's Coach Bowden, and, you know, he says, I know your father passed away. I know your mom might be struggling. If you feel like you need to come closer to home, because Morgantown was like 25 miles from where I grew up, I have a job for you here if you need to do that. So I was like, wow, this guy's the head coach at West Virginia University, and he's has that much compassion for my family and our situation and our circumstance and my mother. Not very many people would do something like that.
Nick Saban remembering Bobby Bowden, who, if you ever saw the movie We Are Marshall, about the tragedy of the Marshall football team, right? Bowden was the coach at West Virginia during that time, and in the movie, one of the actors plays Bobby, and he has Marshall come to his campus, and they are able to use his film room, and he gives them tape on the whatever opponent, right, to get ready to rebuild. The new coach that came in, Jack Langle, after the Marshall tragedy, the new coach came in, and Bobby reached out, and, hey, come over, right, use our film room, watch whatever film, take as much time as you need. There's that great scene in the movie. They have the cross on the back of their helmets at West Virginia for Marshall in green. And the coach, played by Matthew McConaughey, right, says, that's first class, coach, to Bobby Bowden. You have that scene in We Are Marshall. But a lot of stories of just the great person he was over the years. Now, Jimbo Fisher, who, of course, coached under Bobby and then replaced him at Florida State, opened up his press conference yesterday at Texas A&M, remembering the great head coach.
Keep the Bowden family in your prayers. I know we lost a great man in Coach Bobby Bowden today, and meant so many things to so many people, meant a ton to me. And not only just when I coached with him, but when I was learning to be a coach and around him and at different times with his family and the kind of person he was and who he was. It's amazing how he affected so many people, but he lived his life the way it was. And like I said, as fine a gentleman and coach that's ever walked the sideline, in my opinion. And just a tremendous human being. But the lives he touched and the players he touched, that's his legacy, and that's what he always talked about. And we did in the last times we talked about that. He said those things, and he definitely did that, so he lived a fulfilled life and said he was ready, and he knows where he's definitely at, that's for sure. And also keep RC in our prayers as he continues to battle the things he has. As like I said, football is important, but there's a lot of things bigger than that, and wish him and his family so much and well-being for his future and safety.
Jimbo Fisher on his former boss and, of course, friend Bobby Bowden, who passed yesterday at the age of 91. Thoughts and prayers go out to the Bowden family and really all of the college football community or Florida State, because that's how impactful of a coach he was over his long career and how great of a person he seemed to be off the field as well. Was a great life, great career, right? Big family, lived to almost 92, but certainly tough news over the weekend to hear of the passing of Bobby Bowden. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, Josh Allen's new contract, what it means for the NFL moving forward, and FPI projections for this NFL season. Plus, we did have the Hall of Fame induction over the weekend, and because of the pandemic, we had to do two classes in one. What a lineup! We'll hear from some of those new Hall of Famers throughout the afternoon.
And while we usually do a top 10 list every Tuesday, we may actually rank the Hall of Famers from this past weekend because it was that strong of a class with everybody going in. We'll get to that coming up. Plus, our training camp check-in later on this afternoon with David Newton for the Carolina Panthers. You know, I think it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I was talking about this story I saw where Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis did an interview and admitted that they don't bathe their kids very often. They said once you see dirt, that's when you know it's time for a shower for them or a bath. But otherwise, the kids, they're good to go. And they themselves admitted, like, yeah, we don't shower very often. Ashton Kutcher said after workouts, he would just wash, you know, splash his face with water to get the salt off. That was about it. And he would wash his groin area and underarms every day, I think he said. But otherwise, he'd shower, you know, like every few days. Now, right, sure, you skip a day of showering, that's fine. If you're just laying around, whatever. You work out, you got to do a full-blown shower after. That's nasty. How could you get into bed and lay in those sheets? I feel sticky and nasty and sweaty. Ugh. But they're not alone. Apparently, this is like a Hollywood thing because over the weekend, we got another celebrity to be anti-showering. And he was one of my favorites. Now, I don't think I like him anymore. Or at least, I can't like him the same. Jake Gyllenhaal, one of my favorite actors. Love all his movies. I think he's great. But after hearing him talk about how he doesn't shower either, I can't look at him the same way. I don't think I can watch or enjoy Jake Gyllenhaal movies the same. He said, more and more, I find bathing to be less necessary at times. I do also think that there's a whole world of not bathing that is also really helpful for skin maintenance, and we naturally clean ourselves, is what Gyllenhaal said. What is going on in Hollywood? I know that Hollywood, right, we always think of the actors and everything, of having a different point of view, or they're out there, they think differently than everybody. They have these different perspectives and thought process. But what is going on here where these actors and actresses are not showering? This is one I can't get behind. I don't think I can watch Jake Gyllenhaal movies. I can't watch Bubble Boy ever again, or Donnie Darko, or any of these other great films. Zodiac. I can't watch Gyllenhaal. No longer is he one of my favorite actors. Mila Kunis and I can't watch that 70s show. You're telling me we have all these actresses and actors, celebrities who are on the red carpet, people that everyone looks up to and think like, oh, they're some of the most beautiful people in the world. And you tell me that they're not showering for days? That they think it's more beneficial to not shower than to shower? Can't do it. Now, The Rock has since responded to all of this and said, I shower 3 times a day. That may be a little too much. But The Rock says he showers when he wakes up. Cold shower to start the day that gets you going. Then he goes and he works out. He takes a warm shower after that. Then he goes to work and he takes a hot shower at night before bed. I think that's a little much. 3 showers. That's a little too far in the other extreme. If you shower before you go to bed, I don't know if you have to shower when you wake up. I know you sweat during the night, but if you're going to wake up, shower just to go work out, why don't you work out, save some water, and then shower after that? But I'd rather the 3 showers than no showers for a week. What is going on in Hollywood? Hour 2 coming up next. Hall of Fame inductions and Josh Allen's contract. We'll get to it on the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.